Polkainal, and it's kind of an all-around junior waterman, water woman program. And a few years ago, a lot of the parents were saying, well, why don't we do something like this for the adults? So that's kind of what we're trying out this year, doing like one thing a month. And so with the kids programs, and we have like guest instructors or guest talk lectures or whatever, we usually have them call up the NSA and see what they have on them. Like on Google, we're kind of trying to copy that like a little bit with the adults, a little bit. Well, Keone's going to start off, this is kind of also going in with our adult surf camp that we started too, so it's kind of combining both things at the same time. And so Keone's going to be the guest for the surf, and I don't know what everybody knows about Keone's background, and he probably kind of, he doesn't want to probably tell too much about it. Any questions on any of this? I want him to maybe talk. I wouldn't mind him talking a little bit about the contributions that his dad has made to surfing and surfboard design. And some of you may know, some of you don't know. And okay, so if he has anything that he feels something about Duke, even if it's negative, that's okay too. We all get all the pictures of everything, right? And then so. We're gonna go in the water. So everybody's got different skill levels. So whatever, we're not gonna take, if you're not, if you don't want to go out there, we're not taking you out there. If you do want to go out, I think Keone's gonna stay inside with the people that want
to. Less advanced.
The less advanced. And the more advanced can go out with one of my guys, with Shane, who's a really good instructor and good surfer. And we'll send other people out there too. Now, if you don't want to paddle or you don't feel up to paddling the board inside, you know what? When we go out and surf and stuff, when you ever paddle out with your friends, a lot of the best talking is while you're paddling out together. So while you're paddling out with Keone, he can be talking to you at the same time. You know, you're sitting out there in between waiting for the sets. That's where I get most of my philosophy a lot of times with my friends, just sitting there talking, you know, or singing songs or whatever in between the sets. So that can be all part of this too, so you have a lecture while you're paddling out in the water. Now the other option we'll throw in for somebody, if you don't feel like you want to go on a board, we can go in a canoe and do a little bit of canoe surfing. We're not going to do anything too radical, we can stay inside. And for those of us who are part of the surf camp, you know, when we did some of these classroom things, we've known what the tides are doing. You know, Keone could talk about that. I mean, look and see what the surf is doing now. The tide's dropping super low to like a -0.2 at around 11 o'clock.
Ouch.
Later in the day, the tide's going up. Start seeing what it does to the surf. I'm talking to you like I talk to the kids, but this is what we have them do. We go, we show them in the classroom, and then we go out in the water and do it. Now, a few months ago, we did something where Mark Chicola was in the room, and he did lineups. He made these little cardboard cutouts and all that. And then the kids do the lineup in the room. And right after that, I think we also had Fred Hemmings come and talk about what the tides and currents do. Right after that, they go right in the water, and now they're physically experiencing what they just, yeah. So we're kind of implementing that kind of thing. So anyway, I'm just going to hand it over to Keone and let him talk about water, the surf, dad, whatever his background. If you guys don't know Keone's background, of course he runs down in Hawaii Surf Shop.
How old is that?
My surf shop started really when we shaped the board out of wood. The only reason he had to shape out of wood was that his calabash uncle, well, I'm not going to build it for you, was the first beach attendant for the Aorea Canoe Club. And his claim to fame for the outrigger was that the accountant came to him after his first year, he told him, you're making too much money for the club. I'm here today more for what you folks want to know. You know, because when you come to these kind of things, I always look at, if I'm going to sign up for something, there's something that I want to know. And I'd rather get to that, because that's of interest to me. My background and all of that, it's my background. It's like, I look at it as, that's just the path that I went on, that my family went on. It wasn't meant to be anything, but what we did. So I'm interested in what you folks want to know. So I just leave it up. Ask the question, and I can the brakes. Tide change plays a big part of it. One lesson I learned early in life was with my wife. When I finally told her what the best tide was to go surfing, I lost that chance to go at that tide. Okay? The best time to go surfing really is on an incoming tide. Waikiki tends to be middle tide to high tide because it fills the reef in better, and so it allows the wave to break a better time. Low tide, you'll get good waves. But if I had that hour and a half to pick, I'd look at how far before mid tide to the hour after mid tide. You know, but and again, different places do different things. The North Shore will tend to do a little. The reasoning is that when you have all this energy now flooding into your island, the chances of you getting better waves are going to come at that point. An outgoing tide, especially around here, all the water gets pulled to the Molokai Channel on this side of the island, and we have a big drop-off by the Diamond Head Buoy. So when that water starts to go back out, it can hold back the waves, really. But yeah, if I had the best time, I don't want to see everybody out at that same time. That answer? Also depends on how high the high is and how low the low is. Because what I try to explain to people on the tide is that it's moving. Okay, it doesn't stop. So if we go from a super high tide to a very low tide, you're going to get a lot of water moving out that's going to slow down the wave. But on any incoming tide, when it reverses itself, you get a positive flow. Okay, so if say on the incoming tide, it's a smaller tide change, but you're still going to get the benefits of the movement. Now, if it's a higher tide change, you're really going to get a benefit. You know, you could go from a day that is 1 foot, and on that incoming tide, it'll grow a foot just for that one section of time. A single fin. Reason being, when you ride big waves in Hawaii, they tend not to be smooth. It's usually windy, it's usually bumpy. And having, for me personally, having a fin that's 9 inches tall, I always have something touching the water. And the quad or the thruster, they tend to leave the water and they don't engage. And when you're going 25 miles an hour and you come back and you hit, because of the fins being towed, it tends to take the board in a different direction. But a single fin just seems to always do. And I'm not turning off the top of the wave or doing the things that thrusters or quads are designed to do. So I'm still old school on that. Father taught me to surf. I started surfing at the age of 5, and I'm 60 years old. So I basically grew up on a surfboard. Life, you know, my first surfboard was a balsa surfboard. My dad had built it, and at that time I still didn't know how to swim. I wore a belt. You ever saw the movie Endless Summer? That belt with the buoy, that was my brother. But the belt I had first. Okay? And I had a choice. This beautiful brand new surfboard, which ended up having my name painted on it at the Outrigger Canoe Club when it was down where the hotel is now. I had this big metal buckle. And my dad came up to me with this board. And he said, in order for you to get this board, you have to take off the float device. And let me tell you, I debated that because I knew I couldn't swim. And what I didn't know is that every beach boy was going to be watching me in the water. So finally, I wanted that board. So off went that belt. And I learned how not to fall. You know, that if I did start to fall, I fell on my board. And, you know, but like I said, every beach boy around was watching. Because back then, everybody knew everybody's children. It's like when I would disappear and I would walk up to where the Sheraton Hotel is, and I couldn't go past that wall. But when we were younger, we used to get the straw mats from the beach, and we would make sails. And we would sail all the way to number threes, and then drop the mat and surf. So one day, unbeknownst to me, everybody along the way knew who I was, and they were calling back. We see your son down, and you know, probably then, the Adventure Time, I was probably 8, 9, and they would call back till I finally walked back. And the first thing my father asked me, how was Threes? So the beach back then, people took care of each other's children. I mean, that was the beach boy lifestyle, basically. You know, when my dad grew up, ships would sail to Hawaii, right? It took a week to get here. They spent a week, 2 weeks here, and then they take a week to go back. But he didn't have an education. He grew up on the beach. His parents divorced when he was 11. His mom went back to Florida, where she was from, and my grandfather was a machinist at Pearl Harbor, so he went to Long Beach. And my dad looked at them both, and he was the oldest of three children. And he basically said, I'm not going to Long Beach. I don't know what Florida's like. I know what Hawaii's like, and I'm staying. And so, you know, when they were getting ready to go to the airport, he was the Habash uncle that kind of looked out for him. And his grandma still lived there, because they grew up in Kaimuki. So the beach became an important place for his knowledge, his learning from the people, you know, that came to stay, taking care of their children, money at that point. The beach boy really became a beach boy. They did more than just take surf lessons or canoe rides. You know, if the adults wanted to go somewhere, we watched the children for the day. Not a big deal. We got, you know, my knowledge from it. I mean, I lived in sand, you know. Many nights, I remember waking up in the morning with my bed filled with sand. Because if I fell asleep at the beach, they were going to wake me up. They scared me home, plop me down. Anything else? Not that I know of. You know, I think there was enough people out there understanding current and tides and wind. But, you know, got it. If you're on a surfboard, there's a lot of different currents running through that because of all the islands. And it was small craft warning. And the small craft warnings were really there for almost a week before. So it's the same thing as surf. As this storm is generating energy, this energy, you know, it keeps building on itself. And so where are you going? Needs to break in a certain depth of water. And that being said, what we see is that Hawaii is a reef system. And the tide, it'll break at different parts of the reef. That's why I was mentioning Waikiki, we tend to like a fuller tide because it needs to pass over a portion of the reef to get to a good section where the wave is able to peel left or right. When it's lower tide, the wave will hit the outer sides of the section, or like here, when it's low tide, it breaks right across the sand channel because it's more depth of water in relationship to what size of wave will break. So he's telling you to sit inside, but he's trying to move you to where there's a better part of the reef that's probably more consistent. Even though the outside will break, you may have one that breaks out there, but you have four that breaks on. So and the neat part now is Google Earth, because you can go to Google Earth and take a picture to see that structure, you'll get an idea where the wave can break, where it could break, where you can actually catch the wave because there's a pinnacle up where the energy hits it and pushes up, and you can get in before the wave really breaks. So if you go there, you know, just pick a break that you enjoy and take a look at it. Now the next thing to do if you really get into surfing is take a face mask when it's flat and go diving, because the wave will mirror the bottom. Because if you see there's a rise of the wave, depending on the direction of the swell, as it hits this reef, it's either direction, it casts out. A lot of times there's a wave that comes off here and it goes up. So here, but when we were learning to surf the North Shore, that was the one thing my dad made us do. We put on face masks, we go, and we check the whole reef out. One break in particular, sunset. The sunset is so fickle, depending on swell angle, because the reef does all of these kind of things. It bites a piece out here, and it goes deep in here, and it comes back to the reef. And so there's many ways, depending on swell size, all the way. So when you understood that, you knew exactly where to paddle. And you knew exactly where to get the wave out. And then, you know, then on top of that, then we got into lineups. Because basically, in Hawaii, the quicker you learn how to line yourself up in the correct takeoff spot, the more fun you're going to have. Because people tend to gravitate to other people. Right. Such a gift in the tide. You know, tide going out, everybody believes that's where I need to be. So, think Google. You can actually turn Google around and look into shore. When we were learning to surf, the first thing my dad used to always tell us was that paddle outside the break, 50 yards, 75 yards outside the break, and look back and see where this white water pattern, you know, finds. So what we would do then, what's the better surface out here? That's basically what they're doing. They're doing that. They also pay attention to the sand bowl. I mean, you know, I use Google for a lot of spots now. I mean, you know, at least to explain it to people, you know. And when you start to know that, you don't need to be with the pack. You can kind of know when to drift away from the pack. Storms have come from 2,000, 3,000 miles away, and they've sent out this pulse of energy, and this pulse isn't going to stop. It just goes till it hits shore. And in this pulse, just like today, if you watch, you know, you'll see every 17 minutes there'll be a set. If the waves get smaller, there'll be every six, but a pattern will form where it goes 4, 4, 7, 4, 3, you know. So that plus tide, you'll always be, if you start to put all those pieces together, you'll always be in the right place at the right time. Yeah, it's like for me. I mean, I we've got it to within a minute. I've been at Waimea, and people used to say, well, shit, you hardly surf there. But the days that I did surf there, I knew when the swell was coming, like today. Before I came down here, I went to the internet and I went to get the buoy report, because through this buoy report I knew that the surf is still coming up. The swell energy is still there, and this afternoon is going to be bigger than it is today, this morning. But as you take in for the day, so you know what kind of board to bring, you know what your ability is, and you know when it's going to get too big for me, I need to get out of here. And use that knowledge. Use that. I mean, before, you know, it was stars, it was wind, it was clouds, and the biggest one when I was growing up was water. You could see the water change. The turbulence started to happen in the water. The water went from being real clear, where you could see the bottom, to agitation, and it started getting milky, because this energy, you know, it just doesn't all of a sudden show up. And so because of that, you you started to know that there was surf coming. All of that, then you add, you know, the other pieces. It's just like now, right? They have this beautiful canvas sits up on his wall. And you, when's the best time to go? And if you're like everyone, we don't have every day to go surfing as if I go at this time. So my whole work schedule gets set up for those best 2 hours.
That's
it. So where the reef is, and in this reef there's these holes out there. And so when this energy comes and it hits, it's really telling you where the shallow spot of the reef is. And again, that's where the wave's going to gravitate to first, because it needs the shallowness for it to break. I mean, like I said, out here, there's three of them. If you start looking, you'll see three distinct. And depending on the day, depending on swell height, I got another 3 minutes. I'll drift. They'll be talking star, and we're having a good time. And then you slowly kind of disappear from the path, and you travel slowly back. They'll come, and you'll be smiling because they'll all be, they'll be paddling over, and you've already got a wave. One of the tricks. I'm inshore. Sunset green. It's west, it'll hit this one first. It'll still lift up here. Okay? But it'll shift to this. Very seldom will you get the north that comes from that side. Because usually on the north you go to Laniakea. What happens why the west is comfortable for you. Is you don't have to drop you back and forth. And the suit here can be safer. I have to roll you all the way to the inside. I choose where you want to sit and sit there and be religious to it. The other thing you really got to know at sunset is your landmarks.
Yeah.
If you create the triangulation, you will not have to say, oh my God. You'll be laughing. Because everybody else inside of you will be saying, oh my God. As you progress, that's what you want to start to be doing. You want to have the knowledge to have the upper hand, because, yeah, you're still going to get it. I've still been underwater from out here on a wave and ended up in here. Same. I couldn't even see big waves where I'm in Kaha. And my father took me out and I was 14 years old, and it was probably, I want to say, 10, 14 feet, somewhere in there. I was scared, I was petrified. So I'm paddling out with him, he's saying, no problem, you know, and he paddles me out. He says, okay, sit right here. So I go, oh yeah, my dad puts me in the spot, I'm going to sit in a nice place. I'll be able to catch some waves, you know. The next thing I see, he's paddling over this way, smiling. Looking back at me, I got drilled for 3 waves all the way to the beach. This was before Lucian. Sitting on the shore, almost crying. I don't want any part of that. And his whole thing was, you've had the worst happen to you, now you can surf. And that's the truth. You know, it's getting over the fear allows you to surf. Till then, in the fearful stage, you're like, you're almost wanting to, so you're never in the position. That's why a place like Sunset, we always used to laugh, is that I'd love it when it had 100 guys surfing. Because if you really watched, you're lucky if you saw 20 guys surfing. But everybody else are like birds. They showed you where the line was, where the wave broke, and where it was safe. Because they always kind of stayed on that. So when you paddled, you paddle right along the line to go out. Anything else?
A lot of
I really want questions, because I could go on and on, and because there's so much that we've been gained for all these years. And I was lucky with my father in that he was learning how to do all these things, because his goal was to succeed at riding waves. And not just, you know, there weren't a lot of people. In fact, when they first started surfing the North Shore, they tried to pick people up to take them to the North Shore. Because if they went with their buddy, they wouldn't see each other sometimes for 2 hours. They paddle out, one guy catches a wave, he's gone. He wipes out, he's gone another half hour, facing his board, while the other person is sitting, you know. So they tried to take people to go with them. So they had to understand, they had to get the knowledge, because again, they started off riding 70-pound wooden board. All the things I learned in surfing. It allowed me to do what I was taught, and just so happened for me that day, nothing could go wrong. But I had spent enough time surfing big waves that I still understood that tomorrow I could go out and everything could go wrong. Because it's like you got to grasp what you have at that time, and for me at that time, everything fell into place. There was nothing. I couldn't do anything wrong that day. Went out, and I got pummeled on a half a dozen waves. Hi, same knowledge. You know, gee, what's wrong 4 days later? So, yeah, you know, riding Waimea is a fun way. You know, there's a lot of exhilarating things as far as the takeoff. For me, it's a more exhilarating way. It's down the line. It'd be like taking away that Oman bowl and going to the sandbar. Every time across the wave, it's growing as you're going. And then you're looking at the end of Motao with a bowl, like if you decide. And you see this big massive, and you gotta decide, what do I do? You know, and should I have caught it that way? And if I kick out now, what's gonna be behind me? So yeah, Macau is probably for me, that's my favorite place on earth. It's the only beach that I've ever been to that I can roll around in the sand all day, in the shore, or the grain of sand. It's, you know, it's just, as we got forward into riding big waves, if you grab a board, you can leave the beach, they can get in a lineup, because it's fairly easy to get in and out. And everybody can walk in. Nobody's really, you're so far out. The only people watching are the guys out there. And I guess also on top of that, the best ways I've been able to be around is watching my friends surf. Because that's one view nobody gets to see except you. Take off on this wave, and the wave is going right. I'm looking at the very end of the wave. I'm seeing this whole wave. Okay? Now, as I'm saying that though, you gotta remember, I'm knowing all its nuances. I know what the bottom's doing at different places. I've put all this information from all the times riding that wave. So I know there's gonna be a steep section, if it's gonna go flat, right where I can cut back, where I've got to make sure I carry speed to go through there to get to the next section. So all of these pieces are all apart. I'm definitely not looking at right here. Yeah, so tend to surfing. It's the only thing that when you... bad. It's the only sport that you can learn right that second, and come back on the next wave and change it. So, all with it, and that's what makes it fun. Study. I mean, if it's a place you surf all the time, get to learn everything about it. Because then, it'll always be fun, because the knowledge that you're gaining makes it feel comfortable. And when it becomes comfortable, then you can actually grow in riding different sizes. Good when you run somebody over, they remember they've been run over, and they hopefully don't get, it's like one thing I want to say, I always in, as this, the surf's gotten crowded, people have always not been in the right position. When the surf gets bigger, they tend to be caught inside, and the first first thing that person on the inside does to get out of the wave is they try to paddle to the shoulder of the wave. Okay. As surfers, what we got to understand is that we've already messed up by being inside. Okay. If this wave is peeling to the right, there's no sense for me to paddle to where the surfer wants to ride to. The best is to paddle the other way and take your lick, because you're already in the wrong position. And chances are, you're not going to make it to the shoulder anyway. And on top of that, you wreck the guy's wave. He's riding to ride that way. So I've had it out here where I've been outside and I've watched people paddling, and it's like, come on. Every place you want to turn, there's somebody trying to get to the shoulder instead of just, and they still get caught, and they still, I think the worst thing that's ever happened to surfing is the leash. Because the leash has given the false feeling that you can sit wherever you want to sit. You don't have to have knowledge of there, and you're going to pull it back. If you did that without leash, you'd be swimming for 20 minutes. And I think in that aspect, the surf area would be emptier. You know, and my repair business would be better. But that's what happened when I was there. I brought the first surfing leash back and surfed at Rice Bowl. This is 1971. They had just collars and tie it and put it on our board and go surfing. And everybody laughed at me when I paddled out here to summer 70, I mean, summer 70? No, it was a winter 71. No, summer 71. And now they're chasing their board and it's coming this way and it's going through old man. And I'm sitting there by myself. I have lost surf etiquette. They've forgotten, you know, to take turns riding waves. Even when they fall off now, think they learn to paddle around, nah, they paddle straight back up the guts where everybody wants to ride. And so that's why people tend to get in the way of everybody. I don't like that.
In French.
Yeah, but you know what happens on that? The swimmers end up getting where the best waves are, and the surfers get the horrible waves. I remember that when we were in New Jersey once, and they had it, you know, where they blocked off with buoys. Yeah, we didn't know what the buoys were, and you know, I tried to be a person. Surf etiquette. Person on the inside of the takeoff spot that's going has the right of way. Okay? The first inside is that if the wave is breaking where I'm at, that's the person that has the right of way. I'm sitting on the shoulder. So I should let that person go. That's surf etiquette. Now, the only time for me that doesn't, as far as taking off on the wave, that's kind of the rule of thumb. You know, there, you get frustrated if everybody's always sitting here taking waves. So you, the teacher always taught, ride the wave to shore, paddle out around the surf, going back out. The reality is, paddling around, you actually go faster. Because all this energy that went to shore has to go back out to sea. Where it goes back out to sea is in the channels or in the deeper section of water, because it's not going to fight against the wave. The water that goes back out to sea is actually pulling you back out. So you can then pull off of it and paddle to the spot.
So how do you decide where around
is? Oh, say like today, where do I paddle out? Right? There's waves breaking all across. If you're looking out from here, it doesn't show you anything. But you know if you look out, that right today, right now, it's a predominantly left slide. Okay. So as I'm going out, and this wave is breaking, okay, I know that this is the main channel. Okay. I know that because when there's no waves, this is where everybody swims. So I know that that's pretty a safe place to go in and out. So as I see all these waves, okay, what happens here is this water goes out right into the wave there. And then it turns and it goes towards Waikiki. So as you're going, you can go out, you can turn towards Waikiki, and then you can go back out. But this is why understanding the environment you're at, and what I had mentioned earlier, is if you know that this is a place you're going to surf, go onto Google. See what the reef picture looks like. And they have great pictures showing the reefs. On a day like today, you know exactly how to go in and out through to it. Waikiki is the same thing. Even though the wave tends to break more on a sandbar kind of configuration and the sandbar changes, if you Google it, you're going to see it's the same thing. You have Queens is here, there's a channel through here, right? You've got canoes, the breaks like this. There's actually another channel here that the catamarans used to go in and out. We called it the catamaran. Now you can go into the, depending where you finish riding the wave, you can go back out the catamaran channel. So there's ways to configure to get yourself back out. Just like in beach breakers, when I went to France, you know, I was, it's hard to figure out how to get out. But if you watch it long enough, you understand, well, if I paddle this way, I'm going to get one on the head. But after I get that one on the head, there's not going to be anything over there. And I can sneak back out. And then they start getting it. Once you get to where you're only a foot off the water, it's really hard to understand what everything's going on. You really can't see up the backside. But if you had sat on the beach and watched it for a little while, you'd get an idea where the flow is and how to get in and out. I want to surf. Practice holding your breath. You know, people, I used to tell people, I used to practice holding my breath in my depths in the shallow water to build up my lungs. My dad, he was worried. When we were growing up, he made us all play water polo. And water polo in high school here was in the fall season. We'd get in shape. Like, you got to feel secure that you can hold your breath. So the longer you learn to hold your breath, as you're getting pummeled, you're going to know that, okay, if I relax, for one, relaxation. It's going to be the mental side relaxation. If you relax, you're going to conserve energy. And you do so, you hold your breath longer. Secondly, you got to know that in this turmoil, it's only going to calm me around for probably not more than 17 seconds. Seems like 2 minutes or 3 minutes, but if you understand that, tell people, now that you have a leash, use it. And by what I mean by that, is I'm going to get pummeled. What I tend to do is I can, instead of fighting to get to the surface, I pull my body together to make like an arrow. I let it pull me fast as it can towards shore. Because pulling me towards shore, I'm getting out of the impact zone, and I won't get the next one on it. Releases and we're surfing right now, he's a good example. You know, you get caught in a 20-foot wave, what do? Dive down to the bottom, try to come and swim it. He's short. Then halfway to shore, for some reason, he starts all over again. But my dad, this is just not, he says, what are you guys doing? You're going to get in the wrong place. Back to that same thing that happened. I'm in the wrong place. Instead of diving down and swimming out to sea, dive down and swim towards shore. Take yourself away from the impact, regroup, and then go back out. But holding the breath, it's just easy to do kind of things, you know, running with rocks under the water and all of this. We just go also practice in my bathtub. People in the bathtub, yeah. Who's at home? Nobody's around. It's not a big deal, you know? You're not doing a swimming pool, sitting on the bottom. You can't be doing that, man. We don't know if you're alive or you're... So, you know, the bathtub was my best. I practice in the bathtub. But yeah, build up the lungs that way, because a lot of times you don't, I mean, how else are you going to do it? So swimming, yeah, all those things are good, but... Yeah, there's a story there. Quicksilver wanted to do a surf contest. And they had run a surf contest the year before, but it was just another contest. And it was sunset sunset. And a friend of mine, the ones that were showed the direction to trying to make a board that could ride bigger waves. But still then, the waves were smaller waves. They're real wide, fast in the tail. So they created the board that was known as the Hot Hill Board. They, one day surfing grounds where John Kelly lived, me and they were sliding up, and all of a sudden the board started to work. Point for maneuver, which is real subjective, which it is.